Sports Talk New York with your hosts Mark Rosenman and AJ Carter. Sports Talk New York is a Players Point production. It's sponsored by Prince Associates, the company you can trust for all your insurance needs, and the law firm of Decalator Cohen & DePrisco, specialist in line of duty accidents. Here are your hosts, Mark and AJ.
Hello.
Hey, Dave, it's Mark and AJ from Sports Talk. How are you?
I'm doing pretty great. How are you guys tonight?
You know what? Anytime I can speak Slapshot, I'm more than good. So, I got to do this introduction because people who know the movie are going to be shocked at this.
Okay.
And you are going to be shocked by this, AJ.
I'm not shocked at much.
Our next guest, believe it or not, was a member of the National Honor Society in high school. He was a three-sport star athlete. He was recruited by universities and colleges and chose to attend one of our favorite colleges, all right, one of our favorite mascots, the University of Minnesota, on a full scholarship. All right. After a coach named Herb Brooks recruited him. He left the university to pursue his hockey career by joining the St. Paul Vulcans, which is probably one of your favorite hockey teams, because it's
Vulcans.
Right? Junior team, where he won two national championships and subsequently got drafted by the Minnesota Fighting Saints, which I actually have the jersey upstairs, of the World Hockey Association. He played 10 seasons of pro hockey in almost every professional league that existed between 1974 and 1984. He started in the minor leagues playing for the Johnstown Jets and reached the WHA, NHL during his playing career. During his pro career, he won two league and three playoff championships, was named team MVP, captain teams, scored 300 points, racked up nearly 3,000 penalty minutes in about 700 games. He is the only true Hansen of the Hansen brothers in the film. It's our pleasure to welcome one of probably, next to Paul Newman, maybe one of the biggest stars of that movie.
One of your favorites, certainly.
Who, you know, in that movie featured an Academy Award winner, Paul Newman, but Slapshot's Dave Hansen. So welcome, Dave.
Yeah. Wow, that's more than I can remember.
Shows you what research can do.
Well, it's interesting because if you look at that intro, and I'm sure that there are many people out there that are totally unaware that of those many achievements, you made it to hockey at its highest level. And 33 years later, I'm willing to bet that if we would post pictures, all right, of the members of the 1977 NHL All-Star team, you would be more recognizable to a larger group of people to the players on those two rosters. Now, when you sit back and think about that and put that in perspective, how does that make you feel?
Well, you know, all I can tell you is that every day that I went to the rink in those 10 years, and even, you know, leading up to that point, where it was at that point the greatest day of my life. And it was just a thrill to be able to do that for a living, for a profession. And really, it wasn't, at that time, it wasn't being done for the money. It was just being done for the passion of the game, the loving of the sport. And then to have something spin off out of all of it that's been nothing but a great treat, which obviously is Slapshot. And to be, you know, literally become world known, I wouldn't necessarily say world famous, or certainly not worldly rich, it's a treat. It's just a fantastic treat in my life, and to this day I continue to enjoy it and have a blast with it, and hopefully a lot of other people are as well.
Now, your book, Slapshot Original, was inspired by a very good friend of our show who's been on probably every
times,
code book.
Times.
You know,
yeah.
We did a tribute to Herb Brooks.
And
Ross
we did our mascot show.
With Ross Bernstein, who's a very good friend of ours. So, could you tell us how Ross was instrumental in getting you to write this book?
Well, it was really kind of an innocent thing, the way it all started out. He actually called me up to interview me for the code that he wrote out about the fighting in hockey. And you know, I think what in his mind, and certainly in my mind, was going to be a simple 10-question, 5-minute interview over the phone turned into a pretty good 1, 2, 3 phone call discussion. And just the stories just kept flying. I mean, right off the bat, we kind of connected because, you know, he's from Minnesota, I'm from Minnesota. We had a lot of mutual friends and certainly the Gophers connection. And then after pretty much got done talking on the phone, he pretty much said, holy smokes, Dave. He said, you know, you got enough stories there to be writing your own book. And, you know, we both kind of chuckled and laughed it off. Well, it literally was almost to a year to the date that after sitting around in a lot of locker rooms between that period of time with a bunch of guys, and you know the stories always fly when the game is done and the beer is popped, and I kind of got to thinking, you know, I do have a lot of stories, and there's a lot of fun stuff in it. And the one thing that kind of really put the nail in the coffin on me for this one was that I don't think my kids know many of them and really don't know much about my past. So I called Ross back up on the phone, and again, this was about a year later. We really hadn't talked, and I said, hey, how do I write a book? And he says, well, what do you have in mind? I told him, and he says, well, the first thing you can do is get a publisher. And I said, well, how do I do that? And he says, I'll get back to you. And he literally called me back the next day. He says, I got you a publisher. Now you got to write a book. and then we were off. Then I was really scared.
Now, the book is not only about Slapshot, although that's a very big and great part of the book, but it's also about your life. And perception's a very funny thing. Because I'm 50, AJ's just a little bit older than I am, but when I think of St. Paul, you know, I think of hockey, I think of Mary Richards and Ted Baxter, cold weather, the Vikings twins, Dylan and Prince. Yet you describe St. Paul as a fairly tough place to grow up in. Hockey-wise, Minnesota produces quite a fair number of good hockey players. What about that region is conducive to producing hockey players and... You know, our perception of, you know, the Twin Cities is not really what comes across in the book either.
Well, you know, back then, you know, in the, I guess you could say, early 60s, late 60s, early 70s, you know, the great hockey players that were coming out of Minnesota were coming out of, you know, up on the Iron Range, up around Virginia and International Falls and in those area. You know, we had that great Minnesota State hockey tournament every year, and the teams that were winning them were not coming out of the big city areas, the metropolitan areas. They're coming out of the small towns up on north. And so really, where I grew up, it was even more odd that to have a hockey player come out there. The only hockey player prior to me that really made it anywhere was Kenny Yackel. And I'm sure I don't have to tell you much about Kenny Yackel, but, you know, he was a three-sport athlete that went on, actually grew up in the same area I grew up in, went to the same high school, went on to be a three-sport All-American at University of Minnesota and a professional hockey player after that. And between him and then on to me, I don't think there was anybody else. So, you know, I grew up in an area that was, it was a tough area. There's a pretty good discrepancy between the upper and lower west side of St. Paul, and hockey certainly was not a big thing there. There certainly wasn't turned out a good hockey players, but a lot of people skated. You know, every recreational neighborhood park had a big ice rink flooded out onto the football and baseball field, and a lot of people skating. It just so happened that I did a lot more of it than most people and continued to pursue it.
Now, you mentioned, you know, Kenny Yackel as a three-sport player. You actually were a three-sport high school athlete as well. You played baseball and football. And both of those sports, as well as hockey, you made, you know, all-city in. What about it was with hockey, was it that really, really drew you to want to pursue that?
Well, it actually was kind of, in a sense, by attrition. You know, it was extremely common for any athlete at that time, you know, in those days, to be a three-sport athlete. It was very uncommon for someone to focus in on just one sport like a lot of kids do today at an early age. And, you know, three seasons, three sports is kind of the way we did it. And really kind of what it boiled down to, quite frankly, is football was my first love. And I actually thought I was going to be pursuing a football career at the college level. That was kind of my direction. And I probably played baseball more than I played football or hockey, only because the seasons were much longer, especially going through the summer with Legion ball and midget ball and all kinds of things like that. But when I was playing baseball my senior year, I slid into second base and tore up my ankle, which kind of limited my speed, my ability to run as well as I was doing a fourth football and baseball. I just continued to skate more than anything else, and the biggest thing was the biggest hook was, even though I was being recruited to play football by some universities, was Herbie Brooks. You know, Herbie came and talked to me. I mean, there's not a Minnesota kid that grew up or that grows up that doesn't want to be a gopher. And when he said, Dave, we'd like to have you come and be a gopher, I just kind of nailed it right then and there. And I threw everything else out the window and said, okay, that's the direction I want to go.
Well, it's interesting that you mentioned the recruiting by the Gophers, because the recruiting by the Gophers comes right after you actually were selected to play in what we now know as the World Juniors. You were actually on the first team, the unofficial team, because I think officially the World Junior, you know, sanctioned by the International Hockey Association was a few years after that. But in 74, you actually made the team. You're in the team photo, but you're also the last player cut. What do you remember about that experience? And do you remember some of the players on that team that went on to place fifth in that first World Junior Championship?
Oh, yeah. Some of the players right off the bat is Paul Holmgren and Gary Sargent. You know, obviously, they went on and had some very stellar professional careers. And there's a few other that went on and had some outstanding college careers. Mike Heydrich, Kronschnabel, you know, a few other fellas. And the biggest thing that I remember about that was just the fact we went and had the team photo taken. You know, I was extremely excited about, you know, thinking that, and never in my wildest dreams did I ever think I was going to go overseas, and even though they had, really didn't think they had hockey over there. And to be a part of that, the first team ever put together to play internationally at a junior level. And then take the team pictures, and the next day when everybody was supposed to be getting ready to meet at the airport and load the plane, I got a call and said, Dave, you know, we've made a decision and we're not taking you with us. And it was extremely disappointing, you know, for myself and certainly my family as well. But, you know, the one thing about growing up on the west side of St. Paul is you got to be a pretty tough customer to survive there and certainly to make your way through it. And it was just one of those challenges that, you know, I faced up to that point and said, well, you know, that's not going to keep me from continuing to pursue my dream. And I did.
And you carried that a step further. You look at how far the program has come back, you know, from then. With the 2000 team, which was captained by a current New York Ranger, Derek Steppen, they just won the gold medal this past season. And to carry that even one step further, all right, your son, who's a member of the Toronto Maple Leafs organization, played last season for Team USA in Belarus in the IIHF World Championship. So do you take extra pride? I mean, you take a look at that. And now your son's playing in the IIHF in Belarus, and you were really on that first team. So when you reflect on that, how does that make you feel about USA hockey in general?
Well, you know, and I'll throw one little irony in there that I'm sure you don't have in your crib notes there, but my son also grew up here in Pittsburgh and played amateur hockey in Pittsburgh, and I'm going off and playing junior hockey in the USHL. The team that he went and played for were the Tri-City Storm down in Kearney, Nebraska, who were the Vulcans franchise out of St. Paul. So,
wow.
You know, we, yeah, and the funny story behind that is I had no idea until one day, you know, I went down to Kearney to for a weekend to watch my son play, and we come to the game and sit down in the seats, and they all come out. And they come out in the old throwback St. Paul Vulcans jerseys. It was retro night. And I had no idea. So, you know, a little bit of irony there that, you know, I played for the junior Vulcans. He's played for, you know, the Vulcan franchise. You know, I had an opportunity to do the international scene, and then he does it as well. So it's, you know, it's one of those things, guys, that, you know, I'm just totally thrilled that my son has continued to pursue his dream, and it really is his dream. I'm just kind of following on his skirt tails, enjoying a ride with him, and so it's been some pretty neat stuff happening along the way.
And again, which that, you're right, did not have that at all in my crib notes, and that's fairly fascinating, but I'm also one of those guys that try to intertwine a lot of different things, and you talk about irony, because, you know, talking about being the last guy cut from that World Junior team, and you being actually in the photo, And you mentioned that you were recruited by Herb Brooks, who was the last man cut from the 1960 Olympic hockey team. Oh, and he's actually in that photo, but they've superimposed his replacement's face on his body. But, you know, obviously Herb at that point was an assistant coach and was, you know, watching some of your high school games. He recruits you. He becomes part of, he becomes the head of the Gophers program. You get recruited by Herb. You don't end up making the big team. You end up getting sent down to JV and then leave to pursue your professional career. But what was it like, you know, playing, practicing under Herb Brooks? We've heard so many, you know, we've had a show dedicated to Herb. Herb is also one of those guys that I've always looked up to. But what was your experience with Herb like?
Well, really, my experience with Herb was great. When we used to practice, the JV and the varsity often practiced together, and even though, you know, I was not chosen to be on the varsity team, you know, we were skating with those guys, and Herbie was on the ice with us, and Herbie often with me would pull me aside and show me a little thing to work on. He'd say, okay, Davies, you know, this will be after practice, I want you to work on this thing here. And that short period of time that I had him as a coach, I thoroughly enjoyed him. The problem that I had was simply I, at that point in my development, was not good enough, and I admit it, was not good enough to be playing for the Minnesota Gophers varsity team. And I just didn't have the patience or the foresight to say, hey, you know, maybe you ought to just hang in there and continue to, you know, be under Herb's tutelage, and he's going to make you a better hockey player, and you're going to be there someday. It was nothing more than my own frustration, you know, and lack of foresight to know that I should be hanging in there. I wanted to play hockey because our junior varsity team, I don't think there was really any schools that had junior varsity teams other than us. If there was, we weren't playing them because we were playing guys like Koska Electric, which was a senior men's team out of South St. Paul, and, you know, those kind of things. It just wasn't much fun for me. And that's when, you know, I had a good coach, and Dougie Woog was coaching the Vulcans then. And through a friend said, hey, why don't you talk to Wooger, and, you know, we could use you. And Wooger took me right on. He says, David, you know, you want to come and play for me, you'll play for me. And that's the route I took.
Now, as the book moves along, you talk about your early days playing for the real life, you know, the team that the Charlestown Chiefs are patterned after, the Johnstown Jets. That team had Ned Dowd, the brother of the screenwriter, Nancy Dowd, which we just discussed with Jonathan Jackson in our last segment. That team had a line of brothers, all three of them, the Carlson brothers, wore glasses. How close, and this is what fascinates me between your book and Jonathan's book, is that this was really real life. That film, as we look at it, we think it's a farce, but how close were those two teams, the film version and the real-life Johnstown Jets?
Well, I think that was the brilliance of Nancy Dowd. She certainly, from my understanding, other than being related to a hockey player, her brother Ned, who was playing with us at the time, really didn't have much of an eye for hockey or much of a real flair for hockey. And for her to, through a casual conversation with her brother one night, to follow up with a few more to come out and want to come out and say, hey, you know, there may be something here. The brilliance was she took stuff that was real life going on in a real city, real hockey team, real people, real players, and saw really that was kind of at the time a pretty desperate situation. The town was desperate, you know, the mills were closing. The team was struggling. You know, we weren't winning. We were doing a lot of fighting, but we weren't winning. And there was some real characters on the team, some real inner stories going on. There's more fact than fiction in the movie Slapshot based on what was happening in real life in Johnstown. And again, you know, I talk about the brilliance of what Nancy Dowd was able to do and taking all that kind of a dreary situation and spin it to such a model and frame it in such a way that it, you know, it's just an outstanding film that continues to live on and on and on.
Now, in the book, you detail some of the crazy brawls that you were involved with, one of which is in the film, which we spoke about, you know, the infamous, you know, the Keystead Family Camper, which actually was a drink. But there are other memorable brawls or crazy nights. My favorite in the book is against the Mohawk Valley Comets, which I think would have worked in the film as well. Can you fill our audience in, if you remember a little bit, what caused a stoppage and a delay in that game?
Well, if you're talking about the livestock that someone threw on the ice, yeah, you know, and that's the neat thing about it. There's so many things that I think it could have been even a longer version of Slapshot than just a 2 hour that could have been put in there, and that was certainly one of them. That, yeah, we're playing in literally it's as low as you can go on the ladder as far as the rungs of hockey. Playing in that league, and it was a tough, rumble league. There was more fights than goals scored often in some games, and Utica was one of those places where the fans just got into the game, and they hated the Johnstown Jets. They hated, you know, the Carlson brothers and Dave Killer Hansen, and they were characters themselves, and somehow, some way, someone brought in a live... I'm trying to remember, was it a chicken or a pig? You guys probably remember better than I do.
Yeah. The live chicken.
The chicken. And they threw it on the ice, and it was hysterical watching first the line. The guys just kind of play stops. The guys stand and watch, and the referees chasing around. And finally the utility guys from the arena coming in and trying to catch it. It was literally one of the funniest things I've ever seen.
Now, the film is... we all feel is an exaggeration of these stories, but yet, it, you know, like you said, it's more based on truth. And this is what's amazing. The scene in which, in Slapshot, where the fight takes place before the game, this actually is rooted in a brawl in Binghamton with the real-life Dr. Hook, Ted McCaskill. But what really triggered the brawl was the pregame warm-up and what the Broome County Dusters were wearing during the warm-up. And AJ, you're going to be blown away by this. Could you fill us in on this? This is the best.
Okay,
go ahead.
Yeah, well, again, it's one of the hilarious... At the time, there was nothing funny about it, but you look back, it's just one of those hilarious locker room stories where, again, Jeff, Steve, and Jack, you know, and Jack and Jeff are two of the toughest suckers that ever put on a pair of skates, and Steve didn't have to be tough because he had Jeff and Jack on both sides of him, but all three of them wore... black rim safety glasses. They never wore contacts back then. They just wore the glasses. And Teddy McCaskill, I mean, gosh, you know, he reminds me of the old gunslinger Ed Van Leef. You know, he was just had that kind of nose and those beady eyes, and he was a veteran of the game. And somehow he got a few of the other guys on the team, a bunch of the guys, to come out in warm ups and put on the fake nose and black glasses and skate warm-ups with them. Well, I guess they thought it was pretty funny, but the Carlson brothers and the rest of our guys didn't think it was funny at all. So we made sure, we asked the coach right in the locker room before we went out to start the game. He says, "Coach, we want to start the game." And he says, "Oh, fine. You know, okay, you guys are starting." And the plan was, McCaskill was the centerman, and the plan was that we were going to, as soon as the puck was dropped, we were all three of us, all three of us, Jeff, Jack, and myself, we're going to go right at Teddy and just hammer the piss out of him. And that literally is what happened. The brawl started. We got screened off. Jack was the first one to get to him. And it was just a bench-clearing brawl that lasted and lasted and lasted, but basically resulted because, you know, we took offense to that team putting on the glasses and the fake nose. And I, you know, in hindsight, I think they all just wanted to be Hanson brothers.
Our line starts, huh, Coach?
Yeah.
All right, so now we touched briefly with Jonathan Jackson in our last segment about how the real-life Jets were much like the Chiefs in a town whose economy was dying, just like you said. How important was it, the fact that so many of the actual Johnstown Jets were cast in the movie and really knew the story? And how much do you think that attributed to the great success the film had?
Well, you know, besides the great screenplay that Nancy wrote, and obviously the great actors, you know, with Paul and Strother Martin and, you know, Ankeen and Hauser and, you know, the, just the great character acts they had. They wanted to really make sure that it came across as real live action hockey. And you just can't duplicate someone being able to play the game well. As much hockey as they had that they wanted to show in the movie. So, you know, Ned Dowd, after the first year, when the movie got written and bought by Universal Studios, Ned retired from hockey. And we didn't know it at the time, but one of the reasons he retired was because he got hired to go out and basically put together all the characters that could play, find people that could play hockey and teach them how to play hockey if they couldn't, that they wanted to fill the roles with. So they wanted to get professional actors. They had Nick Nolte, Peter Strauss, Donnie Most, you know, a few other guys that they really wanted to have in the movie, but no matter how hard Ned tried to work with them, they just could not capture the ability to skate and play hockey well enough to come across the screen as looking like real life hockey players. So, you know, to Ned's suggestion and frustration probably, he just pretty much said, hey, let's just go back. I know these guys. Let's go back, and if we want to be real-life hockey, let's get real-life hockey players in here. So, you know, by doing that, and then, of course, Michael Ankeen was just an exceptional hockey player in his own right, and Paul was just a good athlete. He just caught on right away. You know, there's not no part of the scene in Slapshot and any hockey scene where it doesn't look like those are real hockey players playing hockey out there.
And don't sell yourself short because, you know, and this to me had to be phenomenal acting because, you know, I've seen Fiddler on the Roof many times and I just, no matter how hard I try, Dave, I can't picture you as Perchik. So, you know, what was that about?
Well, I think it's just because I'm just a great opera singer.
We envision this production being like the one in the final episode of the Newhart show, where the whole town Fiddler on the Roof just sort of.
Well, I can tell you that my early years of acting in high school had nothing to do with how I came across the screen in Slapshot, believe me.
So now here's a group of minor league hockey players playing themselves with one of Hollywood's most iconic actors, Paul Newman. What was the first time you met Paul like? And do you think any other big-name actor would have been able to pull off that role the way that Paul did?
Well, certainly, after spending time with Paul and obviously seeing the movie, and after all these years, I just don't know how anybody could ever feel that there's any other acting than Paul Newman for that part. The first time I met him was a funny story in itself. They were actually all in town, they being Newman, the director, the writers, some of the production folks who were in town, even before we our hockey season ended. They were watching the games, and we were in the playoffs. And one day, I was having my pregame nap, and there was a knock that came on the door. And you know, just pretty much kind of similar to the scene where Newman's laying in bed with his boxer shorts, you know, gets up out of bed and stumbles to the door, a little ticked off that his nap's being interrupted. And I open the door, and to my surprise, there's a guy that looks just like Paul Newman standing there. And I'm thinking, geez, that looks just like Paul Newman, except I figured Paul Newman had to be as big as John Wayne, and this guy was like 5 foot, you know, 8, and pretty slim. But he put his hand out, and he says, Dave, he says, hi, I'm Paul Newman. And I said, oh, hi, Paul, I'm Dave Anson. And from that point on, you know, he wanted to come in, and he had some people behind him. They wanted to see what a hockey player's apartment looked like, and I told him, you know, come on in, go grab a beer, I'm going back to bed. And that was the first meeting of really what turned into a pretty good friendship after that.
Now, this book, much like all of Ross Bernstein's books, okay, the beauty of Ross's books is that there's so many people that get intertwined and interviewed in the book, just like in The Code. Yeah. And there's some of that in this book as well. And one of my favorites is Jerry Hauser recounting how the Carlsons were always pulling practical jokes. And, you know, I kind of believe that this team, you know, the group of guys that assembled for this movie kind of made the real-time actors feel part of the hockey community and part of a team. But, you know, I can envision any other type of profession bringing other people and being somewhat cliquish. How did this work so well, and what were some of your favorite practical jokes that you guys pulled on Jerry?
Well, I hate to have all your listeners hear all the stories that I have in the book there and not want to go out and get my book, but, you know, that is just one of the most funny stories that anybody could ever read or tell. You know, Jerry, well, first to ask you questions, one of the neat things about it is that I think, because, as you pointed out earlier, a lot of the people on set were not actors, they were hockey players, and we were in our natural environment. So I think it was a lot easier for us and more relaxing for us to be in that environment and doing what we were doing than it was for the actors, because the actors, it was a job for them, and they were in, and they were acting to be hockey players, and we were just hockey players being hockey players. So we had a lot of guys that were part of the team. There was a whole team concept going on. And as we moved along, with the amount of downtime that you have, you know, hockey players are practical jokers. We had no concept that, hey, you know, there's big bucks behind this thing, and it's a business for a lot of these people, and there's certain ways things are supposed to be done. We had no concept of that, nor did we care. And on one hand, you got to give Paul Newman a lot of credit, as with George Roy Hill, because they certainly were in a position to say, hey, guys, knock it off, settle down. You got to do it this way, that way. And they didn't. They just kind of let us run rampant. And in a way, it kind of literally pulled everybody together. And one of the silly ways that it would be through practical jokes. And Newman was pulling them. A few of the other guys were pulling them. And the one thing we did with Jerry Howes, I mean, Jerry come in, and I was a little, I won't say ticked off, but a little disappointed that they brought in a guy like Jerry Howes to play the role that was written after me called Dave Killer Carlson. Jerry was kind of a doughboy kind of guy, had afro-ish hair, puffy kind of face, kind of seemed like he talked with a bit of a lisp, and I'm thinking, that's not who I should be portraying me. But he was a good guy, and he tried hard, so we just pulled him off the set one time. We kind of snuck him in to the locker room with anybody else knowing what was going to happen, and he certainly didn't know what was going to happen. And we said, hey, you know what we're going to do? We're going to give Jerry a little rookie shave, a little rookie initiation. And we pulled him in. Jeff, Steve, and I grabbed him. Nobody else was in the locker room. We grabbed him around the mouth, taped him up down on the training table in the middle of the room, proceeded to strip parts of his clothing off, and proceeded to, among other things, shave certain parts of his body while he was there trying to wiggle free, and there was no way he was going to move out of it. And I'll just kind of leave it at that.
As well as other things where they would put certain things in his protective gear that would burn. Yeah. I mean, it must have been a wild set to be on. Now, you know, looking back on this, 33 years, two sequels later, reflecting on it all, what goes through your mind?
Well, you know, one of the things is, and you mentioned the two sequels, you know, and a lot of the diehard, real diehard Slapshot fans get pretty upset because they talk about the sequels and how the sequels, you know, compare to Slapshot. There's no comparison. And Jeff, Steve, and I'll be the first ones to agree to that. You know, there is no comparison. I mean, how can you compare anything the Slapshot? And if you do, you're going to probably compare a couple of the other great movies of all, which would be Caddyshack and Animal House. I mean, it's right up there with that. But there's no other movie like Slapshot. It's, you know, consistently the number one guy movie of all time. And, you know, you're just looking back at those times, and I'm thinking, you know, we were 20, 21, 22. We didn't have a care in the world. And even doing this movie was kind of one of those things where we had no concept of what was going to happen, how it was going to turn out. We just knew that we were having a fun time doing it, made a whole lot of friends, pulled a whole lot of jokes, drank a whole lot of beer for 3 months. And, you know, to this day now, to have the Hanson brothers being not only known in the States, but throughout Canada, not only in Canada, but, you know, we've been to Germany, we've been to London. We've got people from Japan that have come up to us, from Austria, from Australia. You know, the fans are around the world, and, you know, as you, I think you said in the intro, you know, certainly everybody puts Paul Newman in there, but when you think of Paul Newman and you think of Slapshot, who's the only other three people that really pop out first? It's the Hanson brothers. And, you know, and the neat thing that we've been able to do with that is continue to have fun with that, and even to the point where we're able to take those characters and help a lot of other people with it as well.
Well, before you go, I mean, you know, unfortunately, with the limited technology we have for an internet show with a green screen, sometimes blue doesn't show up well, and I really... You know,
this disappears,
is,
that this explains why.
This is my favorite jersey, all right? This is my number 17 Hanson jersey, but it also is number 18 on one sleeve and number 16 on the other. So I have all three Hanson brothers on one jersey. It's my favorite, and when I wear it to the Garden, I get lots of compliments on it. But in closing, we asked this of Jonathan Jackson also, for him to kind of sum up what is Slapshot to him, one of the lines. Because, you know, through high school, through college, anytime, you know, I played hockey for a while as well. So in the locker room, you're always banding about many, many of the great lines from Slapshot. What's your favorite scene or favorite line from the movie?
Well, guys, I don't know that there is a favorite because... I think that is the magic of the movie. That is why you can continue to watch it and watch it and go back and watch it and watch it, because there's so many great one-liners. There's so many great scenes. You know, there's things that you don't see maybe the first time that you pick out the second time. You know, little stupid things like Jeff's pet brick that's sitting up behind him, you know, and it's, oh, look at that, he's got a pet brick. I never saw that before. You know, that makes it the magic. That's why it's tireless. You know, there's nothing politically correct. It's got everything a guy wants, and women, surprisingly, too. So, you know, I don't have a favorite scene. I can tell you a favorite line. You know, there's some more favorite lines than others, and some that kind of were off the cuff and just impromptu. I mean, the Dave the Killer's Dave a mess. If you ever talk to Alan Nichols about that line, you know, he's got a great story on how he came up with that. It was kind of an impromptu line that came out, and, you know, give me a grape and orange and then that stick and rip. I mean, it's just stupid, silly little lines that when you hear them, they make you laugh again. So it's, again, I think that's why Slapshot just continues to not die out like a lot of other movies have, but just continues to grow in popularity and literally goes from generation to generations. I mean, we run into people, it's not necessarily hockey people, it's the parents that say, you know, my dad showed me this movie, I can't wait to show it to my kids. So, you know, it's like a passage of a rite, you know, writing.
It's true, because, you know, I'm a Rangers season ticket holder.
And when did you show it to Josh?
And, oh, Josh, I think I showed it to the whole team, a 12-year-old travel baseball team. But it is, you know, there are two things I do. Week before the Major League Baseball season starts, I watch Field of Dreams. Okay. And a week before the NHL season starts, every year I watch Slapshot. It's been an absolute pleasure. Want to wish you good luck in what you're doing going forward, and your son, who was just, and I don't mean this in a bad way, I'm glad he got called up for yesterday's game. I'm also very glad that he didn't have any points in that game, because I'm a Rangers season ticket holder.
Yeah.
But I wish him the best of luck, and it's great to see another Hanson back in the NHL. So thank you so much, David. It's been a blast for me as well as AJ tonight.
Well, guys, the pleasure is all mine. I mean, I love talking Slapshot at any time. And I think, you know, the neat thing is you talk about the movie, so you need to let guys, or about the book, so you need to let guys know where they can get it if they want to get the book. So,
where can everyone get it?
Well, you know, if they want an autographed one, they can just go to Slapshot, go to the website of SlapshotOriginal.com, you know, SlapshotOriginal.com, and you know, I'll gladly send them an autographed book out.
Excellent. What we'll do is after the show, this will be on our wall of fame of all our guests, and there'll be a link directly to that website. So,
awesome.
It is an awesome book. Again, and these two books side by side is probably one of the best holiday gifts I think anyone could get. The Making of Slapshot and Slapshot Original.
Okay.
And, you know, you're right. The sequels, we won't talk about those. but you know, there's also...
I mean, name movies with the sequels was... good or better than the original.
Well, it had a Baldwin in it as well, so that was kind of and there was a good good spin. There was a good spin on the pinwheel line. So there were a couple of moments in two that were moments, and you know it had been so long that you were just clamoring. I'm surprised you take a look at the success of the remake of The Longest Yard. okay. that there has not been a true remake of Slapshot. But I don't think it would ever work. I think Dave is right. 100% right. This was just a rare, you know, guys portraying themselves almost in the movie. Mm. Perfect casting, just, and the whole film, the whole movie, yeah. as Jonathan Jackson pointed out in our chat room, was done yeah. in 68 days, which, you know, by Hollywood yeah. standards, would That's never happen today. Right. So, all right, okay. Dave, thanks so much.
Okay, guys, enjoy it. Take care.
All right. Dave Hanson, so I think, the Hanson
is
brothers.